Welcome to the Archive Project. I'm Andrew Proctor, Executive Director of Literary Arts. The Archive Project is a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers for more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, the fashion brand that's acknowledging extraordinary people who write, read, and shape the world through their extraordinary stories. Find these and more at colehaan.com. In this episode, we feature an event from our young adult stage at our book festival. The panel was titled Not Quite Meet Cute, Modern Romantic Comedies. It features Jenny Han, Sandhya Menon, and Zan Romanoff, and it was moderated by Brennan Kiley and took place on November 11th at the Old Church in Portland. Pretend boyfriends, arranged marriages, getting photographed by the paparazzi. These young adult novels are not your typical love stories. Today, you will hear from some of the best YA writers at work discussing their most recent books. At its heart, this conversation is about the ways in which they are trying to get to the deeper truths, particularly as it relates to their young female protagonists, who often find they are both discouraged from being serious while simultaneously disparaged for the things they love. As one panelist puts it, quote, "What is important is the way you love, not the object itself." In different ways, their main characters are all trying to break from tradition while at the same time trying to fit in. So let's dive into an hour-long conversation about the complications, contradictions, and comedy of being young and in love. Here's moderator Brennan Kiley.
I'm very, 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 very excited and honored to moderate this panel with all of these writers that I admire. All the way to the far right, my far right, Jenny Han, is the New York Times best-selling author of the Summer I Turned Pretty series, Shug, the Burn for Burn trilogy, co-written with Siobhan Vivian, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and P.S. I Still Love You, and most recently, Always and Forever, Lara Jean. She's the author of the chapter book, Clara Lee, and The Apple Pie Dream. A former children's bookseller, she earned her MFA in creative writing at the New School. In the middle, we have Zan Romanoff, who grew up reading and writing fan fiction about boy bands, which inspired Grace and the Fever, her second young adult novel. Romanoff's nonfiction has been featured in the All, BuzzFeed, Elle, GQ, Lucky Peach, The Paris Review Daily, Racked, and Rolling Stone, among other publications. And right next to me, we have Sandhya Menon, who was born and raised in India on a steady diet of Bollywood movies and street food. She blames this upbringing for her obsession with happily ever afters, bad dance moves, and Pani Puri. Now she lives in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where she's on a mission to have her husband and children watch all 3,220 Bollywood movies she claims as her favorite. Her debut novel is When Dimple Met Rishi. And let's give it up for all three of them. All right. So I have a sort of question that I want to get out here, because this is for me being on a panel with writers that I admire like this. It makes me think a little bit about how I want everyone else out there to know more about them. So I'm going to first start off with us, just if you could, to talk a little bit about your most recent book, just to introduce your book so everybody knows what the book's about. Jenny, do you mind starting?
Yeah. Hi, guys. Good to see you. I love Portland. My book is Always and Forever, Lara Jean, which is the third of a trilogy about a girl named Lara Jean who writes secret love letters to boys as a way to exorcise them from her heart. But they're secret, just for her eyes only. But all of her letters get sent out, and a lot of madness ensues. That's the first book. And the third book is the one that came out just this year, and the final book of the series.
My book is about a girl who is obsessed with a boy band called Fever Dream. Her name is Grace, and she's sort of loved these boys from afar for many, many years. And she's walking around one night, and she actually meets one of the members of the band, this guy Jess. And not only meets him, but gets photographed with him by the paparazzi. And then, of course, the tabloids are like, oh my God, Jess is cheating on his girlfriend with like this random blonde. Who is she? So it's a story about Grace meeting her idols and getting to know them and discovering that she thought she knew what they were like and what their lives were like. And she was extremely wrong.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sandhya Menon. My book, When Dimple Met Rishi, is about two Indian American teens who have graduated high school, and their parents send them to this coder camp, hoping that they'll fall in love because, unknown to Dimple, the girl, they want them to get married in an arranged marriage in the future. The problem is that Dimple is extremely feminist, doesn't believe in arranged marriages, and has no desire whatsoever to fall in love. And then Rishi is a traditionalist, and he honors his culture, and he wants nothing more than to be in an arranged marriage. So it kind of follows their journey, and you know, it's a rom-com, so spoiler alert, they do fall in love, but yeah.
So let's get into this a little more in depth. I think it's important when we're talking about rom-coms, right? These are great character-driven novels. And so for me, I think it'd be interesting for us to know a little bit more about these relationships. Can you tell us more about Lara Jean and Peter, Dimple and Rishi, Grace and Jess? Who are they? What complications are in their personalities that their characters make? It might be an unlikely coupling, or what is it about them that's sort of that spark that begins things so that we get a sense of who they are when they're together?
So with Dimple and Rishi, like I just mentioned, they're complete opposites in every single way that you might imagine. However, as you get into I feel like with romantic comedies, and maybe you guys agree, that there has to be, even if it's like opposites attract, there has to be something, some common ground for them to agree on or something that brings them together. And for Dimple and Rishi, it ends up being their culture. Which Dimple feels like she doesn't really relate to too much, but in the course of the story, she finds there are parts of it that she relates to and parts that she rejects. And it's kind of like you have a little bit of history with somebody who shares the same culture because you've come from the same background, and you kind of have, you don't have to explain everything so much, so.
Yeah, and I think with Grace and Jess, there is also definitely this sort of opposites attract element of, like, he's a very famous megastar and she's a very shy high school senior. And so there's, like, that opposites attract feeling, but there is also, they're both people who sort of feel like they have to hide parts of themselves in order to be, like, publicly acceptable. For Grace, it's her fandom specifically. She's very embarrassed to be 18 years old and still, like, just gaga over this boy band. And for Jess, it's like he's lived his entire adolescence in the spotlight, his entire life, or, you know, a lot of his life, people have been telling him, you know, you have to be this very narrow, acceptable version of yourself in order to have a career, and also in order, you know, for the band that you're in, it's not just you, like, these boys, like, depend on you, you know, to sort of be, like, the right version of yourself. So it's a lot about the two of them figuring out how to be the people that they don't think they're allowed to be together.
For mine, I think, so the two main characters are Lara Jean and Peter, and I would say the biggest difference is Lara Jean is more of an outsider and Peter is more of an insider. However, she as a character, I think, is very content in being on the outside. She really likes her life the way it is, and she's sort of, I envisioned her as kind of a throwback character who's in a lot of ways romantic and old-fashioned, but yet lives in a modern world. And I think Peter's quite modern, but she's always looking at things through, I think, rose-tinted glasses a bit, and it's part of her charm.
I do feel like actually all three of us have, it's like the romantic and the not romantic.
Yeah.
It's a big, like, dynamic of these stories.
What is that? Why is that so appealing? Why are opposites attract? Why is that so appealing? Why does that work? And why is it the luring of the non-romantic into the, or the opposite?
I think you need the friction. You need like a tension. And with a contemporary realistic story like all of ours are, I think when it's something romantic, you have to find some sort of tension to make the story really like sing. And it's not the same as when you have a lot of the external drama of like saving the world or like a dystopia. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you have to really make the emotions feel super poignant, super dramatic, and super like grounded, I think. And it's a lot, I think it's very difficult to make things feel as high stakes and like life and death when it's not literally life and death. You have to find a way to make it feel that, I don't know, make that impact.
Yeah. I also feel like, I always feel like I'm arguing with like my romantic self when I'm writing. Because, you know, part of me always wants to just be like, and they fell in love, and it was amazing. Like, not only is that not a dramatic story, it's just not a story. And it is also, and I'm like, you know, I've dated some guys in my life, and like, none of them have been these like big romantic stories, you know, that it's like, it is, you are sort of arguing with yourself and trying to figure out like, you know, okay, to what extent like is romance believable? To what extent like is there romance in the world? And in what like sort of interesting ways can you find it in places you wouldn't necessarily expect?
Yeah, and I think also with rom-coms, like it's just, it lends itself to a lot of humor and comedy to have like two completely opposite characters. There's just so much you can mine there, you know?
Which you kind of want out of life. You want that kind of, you want that that experience of it. It's so agonizing to fall for someone or have a crush on someone and you're like, oh, I don't know if they like me or not. And it, there's all that element of comedy in there that's a reminder of our humility as well. One of the things that I love about all of your books, and Jenny, I really appreciate that you sort of set them up against those sort of like big, like the world's going to explode kind of story, is that I think there's a lot of pressure for writers to try to provide plot to keep people turning pages. And so for me, what I really appreciate is a story that's about the heart. Because for me, what's more exciting than the possibility for a heart to expand? And all three of these writers write stories that teach us, I think, in some way, about the possibility of a heart expanding, the infinite possibilities of the heart expanding. So I appreciate that very, very much. But
you're
I also
welcome.
Want to get into a couple of other sidetracks. Why is that?
No. I said you're welcome.
Yes. Good. I have a question, though, for Zan about fandom, because this is part of your story, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can you share a little about this? Because I had a band called The Fever at my apartment for New Year's one year.
Oh, my
so
God.
This was like this trippy kind of experience. Is it them?
No.
Talk about your fandom.
Yeah, I actually have to shout out my friend Jen, who's sitting right over there in the corner, who wrote Hansen fan fiction with me like when we were 10 years old. We were great writers. It was called Cool Hansen Story. I will say, actually, I mean, like, it's easy to make fun of now, and it's funny, like, don't get me wrong, but it is also true that, so, like, Hansen was the big boy band when I was, like, 10 and 11 years old. And the internet was like just starting to exist because this was a zillion years ago. And so like I went on like askjeeves.com and I was like, you know, tell me more about Hansen. And turned up these fan fiction sites. And like, it was, I mean, talk about, you know, heart expanding. It was mind expanding for me. I was like, oh my God, there are girls who want to talk about the exact same boys I want to talk about. And the way they want to talk about them is by writing stories. Like my favorite thing to do. And I really, like, you know, I had written little, like, in notebooks things, but to get to read people my age writing fiction was, I mean, I was like, oh, this is a thing I can, like, seriously pursue. I mean, you know, seriously, I was 10, but, like, but I could, you know, but I can, like, start, it made me think about it in a really, really different way than I had before. I was like, oh, you can, like, write a story, publish it, people will read it, people will like it. And I've been, because of this book, I've been rereading my old fan fiction for various, like, reasons, you know, for, like, articles I've been writing and stuff. And it's really actually wonderful to, like, pull it out and read it, and I'm like, oh, it's not good, but it's really clear how much I loved it and how hard I was trying, and how much of a writing workshop it was for me to be, like, just writing constantly, and to have a sense that someone was going to read it.
I think that's a great anecdote to share, because I noticed we have a number of young folks out there, and I think people who are thinking about writing or love the books that they're reading should hear about folks who started that way in so many ways and now get to be on stage. I think it's really empowering and exciting for all of you out there who are interested in that same sort of thing.
You just reminded me that I used to write fan fiction about myself. Like, like me and my friends. It would be like us on a ski trip. Like... a murder mystery, but we were always like in it, but it was like fan fiction.
It's called
RPF for those of you.
So that's the fan fiction side. I also want to hear a little bit, just if you don't mind sharing a little bit about what it's like getting out there in the world with your own first novel, since this is a debut novel, and like what that's like a little bit for people to hear about too.
Sure. So it's my first novel that was traditionally published, so you don't hear about like the 15 other ones that are under my bed that will never see the light of day. But I think that's what's important is, like, you see the debut novel and you see, like, the success it gets or, you know, not. But you don't see, like, the writer's other work that they have written for years. And, like, I've been writing since I was very, very small. And I never thought that I could be, like, a published writer just because I never, you know, saw anybody like me who had a novel published. And then I remember my aunt giving me a novel by Arundhati Roy, who is an Indian woman who wrote God of Small Things. And it was like, you know, it blew up, and I realized, oh, like, Indian women can write books, and then, you know, they'll publish them, and other people will read them. And so when I moved to the U.S., it's like such a different culture here where people would reach out to me at school and be like, hey, you know, we noticed you're writing short stories, and are you interested in, you know, potentially writing a book? And, like, it was weird to hear teachers say that. I was like, that's actually something that I could do? Like, that's so weird. And so it's just been, like, really surreal finally being, like, here. And, you know, it's just bizarre. Like, I remember when my publishing team called me when the book hit the New York Times list, and I was just like, they were like, you know, we're pretty sure you're the first Indian American woman who's written, like, a contemporary book that hit the list in young adult. And it was so surreal. Like, I just couldn't believe it. But I think even more than that is, like, the readers who've reached out and been like, I feel like I can tell my story too now, and people will actually want to read it. So I think for me as a debut novelist, like, it has been more than about just writing and seeing it on the bookshelf. It's been about, like, reaching people who might not actually have seen themselves on the cover or in a story before. And, you know, that's why I'm such a huge fan of Jenny Han, too, is, like, you know, the Asian American, like, heroine. I was just, like, floored. I started reading her before I started actively trying to be published. So this is all very surreal for me.
Well, and that's a perfect lead to talk to ask Jenny about now. Your most recent book is the final book in a trilogy. So, what's it like to carry these relationships through three books? I mean, I don't even know how you do that.
Well, it's my third time doing it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's my third trilogy.
I know.
Trilogy of trilogies. I think what I would say is this third book coming out was a surprise for me and for my readers as well. I wasn't planning on doing three. I was just going to do two. And when I decided to do it, I thought, I want to really be sure that there's going to be enough runway to tell the story and, like, bring it home. And I started doing it one night, like, midnight, and then I was writing until, like, I saw the sunrise. And I really still cared so much about the characters and really wanted to continue on. So I did. And I have to say, it's been really gratifying touring this time for this book, because I think with all the people that I met on the road, it made me realize that, because, like, everyone was, like, so warm and, like, so open-hearted and sweet, and I think that they were really just feeling very close to this character who I think is also warm and, like, open-hearted. So it made me feel glad, really glad, that I had written this third book to have that experience, because I think every single event that I did, I just felt, like, so much love from everybody, and it was, like, such a gift to have the time with all the readers.
Yeah, and so I love how you keep talking about the readers, because I think that's one of the special aspects of writing primarily for young people, is you're connecting with young folks and young fans and whatnot. And when you're telling love stories, I'd be curious if you all would talk a little bit more about, you know, how can novels in general, maybe also your own, but how can novels help young people navigate the questions they have about love, about relationships, about heartbreak, about the things that many of your readers are experiencing for the first time, and many other readers remember so clearly and or painfully. So I'd like to hear you speak a little bit about that.
I think for me, primarily, it's wanting the reader to feel like they're not alone, and to feel like the feelings that they have or thoughts that they have are not strange or, like, unusual, but that a lot of people feel them, and so they, to feel that intimacy, I think, that that outlet for them to see the characters do certain things, and then to think I'm not, like, a weirdo for having a similar thought, you know, and just feeling, I guess, like, togetherness or with the character.
Yeah, it's funny to say this on a panel about romantic comedies, but I like sort of hate writing books with happy romantic endings. I feel like also everyone who thought they were going to buy my book is like, "Ooh, I'm not going to do that now." And it's not that there's not like, not that it's not a sad ending by any stretch, but like, you know, it's funny you're talking about like people who are experiencing these things for the first time, like. I'm past like first boyfriend, first kiss, that kind of a thing, but like I'm single and I'm trying to figure out how to be in love and like, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah. It's like that whatever struggles you go through in life, you can be an adult at 40 years old. Yeah. And to me, if there's not like a big gulf between the things I experienced as a teenager, because people are just like people, it's a human experience. And I don't think meeting someone for the first time at 36 that you feel like a crush on or whatever, it's not like hugely different.
Yeah, yeah. you still go like hard-eyed. You're like, oh my god.
Hard-eyed emojis, right?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's fun. Like that's fun, and I do like, you know, yeah. I love like sort of trying to like, you know, have conversations with my teenage self and be like, you know, this is never gonna change. You're still gonna be a dork about boys. but it also it's really important to me, and I, you know, that it is true that when I look back on high school. I like remember the guys that I had crushes on. Like I could tell you their names, but like I don't remember. I'm like I don't know. They're like in retrospect, they weren't that cool. and so I always like I love a romantic comedy. I love a story that has like a grand sweeping love story. Like that's amazing. Just in my work, I also like to present the idea that maybe sometimes you meet someone in high school and you date for a while and it's amazing and it feels like everything, and then sometimes it's not, you know, and life goes on.
Or maybe it was for a moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's like it mattered for that moment and it was important to you, but that doesn't mean that it is like OTP.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It could be like that was significant for what
right.
it was, and don't diminish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. The thing of it ending doesn't mean that it like never mattered, and it wasn't important. And also, this is a big thing for me is like when I got dumped in high school, I was like, oh, like I'm not the heroine of the story because the heroine doesn't get dumped. Or if she gets dumped, she finds out that like he's a villain anyway.
She gets dumped early on, and then there's like another.
Yeah. Exactly, and then she falls in love again, and I would like get dumped and not fall in love again, and I was like, oh, like I'm not the heroine of the story.
That's terrible. No.
But the truly and like magic thing, right, is that now I write books that it's in which girls get dumped and they still get. I'm like, no, like you know, you don't necessarily fall in love at the end. Maybe like you don't know who you're going to be with forever, but like. You're still the protagonist. You still are the hero of your story.
I think that's a really important lesson. And then also, I think like the fun thing about romance and romantic comedies is that you can explore pretty deep things and still keep it like light and fun and fresh and not drag the reader down. You know, so you can explore things like you know complex family relationships and breakups and grief and things like that. And it's still fun for the reader, and you're still pulling them along in the end.
Absolutely. I think that's a good point, because with my To All the Boys I've Loved Before series, you know, there's like a lot of sadness in it where, you know, her mother has passed away, and there's also like an older woman that she really admires who's in a nursing home. You know what I mean? There's like a lot of, and her sister goes to college, and just these other identity issues that come up, but it doesn't have to be under like a net of sadness either.
That makes me think about pressures, the external world, the pressures around the budding relationship in one way or another. And I remember from my years of teaching, one of the most powerful moments I had as a teacher was learning about all these pressures that the students were facing outside the classroom. So for me as a teacher to think about when I give that, you know, 30 pages to read that night for homework and 5 study questions, that these are, you know, there may be children who I haven't had breakfast yet that morning beforehand, or there may be folks who are, you know, dealing with all kinds of pressures at the home, or parents were yelling all night and so therefore the kid didn't sleep, and there are all these other pressures that affect our main characters. Could you talk a little bit about some of those other pressures that affect the relationship and whether or not they are able to navigate it or how?
So in When Dimple Met Rishi, one of the big things that Dimple has to deal with is kind of this, what she calls the patriarchal paradigm that her parents still follow. And like for her, it was really hard because she's a STEM girl. And so she's already in this male-dominated field that she has to, you know, try to prove herself like twice as much as any guy has to. And then her mom is over there telling her, you know, hey, you're 18, you should get married soon, like start thinking about settling down. And by the way, put on some makeup and, you know, straighten your hair and take off your glasses because no boy wants to see that. And so, like, it's not just, you know, being in a supportive household, it would still be hard for a woman and a young woman to be in a STEM field, I think. And having that external pressure from her mom saying, what you're doing is not worth it, you know, this is not what I treasure, I wish you would be more feminine, whatever that means to her mother, is something that Dimple really has to kind of overcome and still say, no, I still want to pursue my dream because it's still important to me. And then Rishi, on the other hand, is like very traditional and wants to please his parents, but he's secret, and they want him to be an engineer, but he's secretly a comic book artist. And so he has to struggle a lot with, what does that mean as a first son in an Indian family? And, you know, does he not want to carry the torch anymore? Does he want to be an artist? And, you know, is that letting his family down? So those are some of the external pressures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny, actually, I think, right, young women get it coming and going. Like, if you're a girl who wants to do STEM stuff, it's like, oh, you know, like, that's, you're not serious enough to do that. And then if you're a girl who, like, loves a boy band, everyone's like, well, that's so silly. Like, that's so girly.
Exactly, yeah.
And so I think that's for Grace, you know, her big fear is that, like, she's a frivolous person. You know, she likes frivolous things in a frivolous way, and she's just not serious and not important, and she never will be. So a lot of the book is her sort of figuring out, like, you know, anything you love, like, that's, it's important, right? The way that you love it makes it important. It's not the thing itself. Yeah. And she has to figure that out, and it definitely, her mom is definitely one of the people saying, like, really, boy bands, huh? Like, that's what you're spending your time on.
That's what people say about romance novels and romantic comedies, too.
Yep. And are they sitting on stage right now? I don't think so.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes.
I think the underlying theme with that is that people, that our society generally doesn't respect things that, like, young women enjoy, right? Because it's romantic novel, you know what I mean? Like, any of that stuff is deemed frivolous or not, like, important because of who's the one enjoying it. But for my books, I think external pressure-wise, I would say it's a lot of the things that high school, most high school kids go through when it's like, where should I go to college? Should I stay together with my boyfriend? Like, all these things I think that might sound not that important on the surface, but I remember at that moment in time for me, like, where do I go to school? Like, where am I gonna get in? I just felt so much stress for all of senior year, like, and junior year too. Like, it was all geared towards that moment. And so I think it's, like, not the most exciting thing to write about.
I was gonna
say, because it's like, it's so, I don't know, it's the actual act itself is kind of a drudgery, but I really wanted to hone in on that and kind of pay homage to that time because it looms very large. And I think in YA, generally, you don't see a lot of focus on that portion of it because it's kind of not that, it's not rife with drama. You know what I mean? Like SATs, college applications.
I don't know. It's
but it's really important. Like, yeah. Like it's one of my pet peeves that oftentimes in YA contemporary, the characters will magically be going to, like, Brown and, like, Harvard and all this. And I'm like, girl, I didn't see you go to any, like, extracurricular thing. And you know what I mean? Like, you weren't studying. You
it's
didn't have an SAT
realistic.
Tutor. How are you going to Harvard?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel realistic to me. So I think if I were a teen reading it, I would be like, I don't believe this person is exceptional enough to go to Harvard. So I did spend time on that research-wise. I just want everyone to know.
I gotta say, I really respect that because, like, the college process was so traumatizing to me that I never write about it. Like, that's the one thing that I'm like,
yeah.
I can't. Heartbreak is fine, like, that's whatever, but, the, like, yeah, the SATs, I'm like, I can't go back
that's
there.
I know. It's too dark.
It's too dark.
Yeah, it was debilitating.
We're not writing a dystopia.
Yeah. So not only are these romantic comedies, these are also, because the future needs to be feminist, it has to be, these are revolutionary books. Because Jenny, I really like the point that you're making, that too much of society deems the things that young women are interested in as something to negate or to dismiss or to make invisible or all of these things. So part of the other thing that I hope is that not only young women are reading your books, that many young men are also reading your books, so that we can begin to think about how this is a priority for all of us. I appreciate them in that from that perspective as well. And so to sort of think about this, because we are talking about comedies as well, I think writing comedy is very difficult. I find it very, very hard. What were some of the hardest parts of your books to write? Or was that the hardest question?
Why are you doing that to us?
I mean, I'll start by saying I don't consider my book a comedy, because if I did, sure. That's the scariest thing I can... No, because it's scary, not not because I'm like, oh, it's too serious. Writing comedy is way too hard and I can't do it.
Okay, I'll say it was hard for me with the final book to balance my thoughts about what should happen versus what I think was true to the character. You know, and so I think the advice I always gave my younger sister was always when she met her now husband, I was because she just moved to a new city, she had a new job, and she was in her 20s, and I was like, maybe now's not a good time to date this guy long distance. Maybe you tell him, should be a little open, you know what I mean? Let's just see. And then she was like, oh yeah, that's a good idea. And then she told him. But I was always kind of steering her towards being maybe more practical or not wanting her to limit herself in ways by a relationship, because I really wanted her to shoot forward and have all her dreams. And so I think I feel the same way with my characters too, but then I think, you know, what does a character want is maybe different than what I want, right. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, and that's a really good thing to keep in mind, I think, for the future, you know? And for me, for my first book, everything was scary about writing comedy. Because you're just it's one of those things where you're will anyone else think this is funny? Or is this just funny in my head, you know? So that was terrifying for me. And this was my first attempt at writing a funny book. So that was really scary. And then I think editors are such amazing humans, because she innately sensed that I was very insecure about this, and she would email me, I love this joke, or this made me laugh, and I was just, it was a great process, because I was okay, someone else, at least one other person finds it funny, so.
Yeah, and I actually, on a more slightly more serious, I have never met my favorite boy band, and they've never fallen in love with me, which is very sad. But Grace's sort of reticence to talk about her life in fandom is very, very much me. Like I said, I started reading fan fiction when I was 10. I have never stopped. If you were to hack into my Gmail drafts, you'd find a lot of questionable emails about One Direction to my friends.
You found your people right there.
Speculation, and then all of a sudden, 5,000 words later, you're like, no, this is just fic. But truly, if you told me five years ago, if you had said to me, you're going to be sitting on a stage talking about how you read and write fan fiction as an adult, I would have, I don't know. I would have run screaming. I would have been who did someone drug me? What are you talking about? And so there was a moment when I, not writing the book so much, but when I sold it, I guess, and I was okay, this is really happening. I'm going to sit on stages and people are going to say, talk about your history in fandom, and I'm going to say, yes, talk about my present in fandom. That was kind of horrifying. It's really fun, though. I recommend doing it, for the record.
Jenny, I've heard you talk about the writing process and talking about having your dessert first. But the idea, I think, as I understood it, was that it was about writing the scenes of the story that you're excited about writing, because you'll bring that excitement to the page in some way. And I think that's really valuable writing advice for all of us. But I'm curious, so it's sort of the opposite of the last question then, not the part that was the hardest to write, but what is a section that you just loved writing, you know, whether you threw yourself into it. You know, I think about basketball. When I played basketball, once in a blue moon, you'd get into the zone and you couldn't miss a shot. And sometimes in writing, I feel like there are some moments where time passes and you've been in the scene and you loved it, whether because you're in it yourself or you think it's funny, or what were some of the better moments of writing the book?
For the Laura Jean series, I think my favorite scene that I wrote was, I have two, I guess. From the first book, it was the Halloween scene. Where Laura Jean is dressed up as Cho from Harry Potter and Peter Spider-Man. I loved doing that scene because I visualized it so clearly in my head, and it had that quick pace to it that I really enjoy. And then I also really liked, from the second book, there's a scene during a snowstorm at the nursing home. And I really like that, because I really like that character. And the third one's a complete blur. That was the hardest writing experience of my life. Because Dessert First is great when you're in an exploratory phase. When you're under the gun of a deadline, it's really hard to have that kind of like loose-limbed freedom to writing where you're just like, it's all about pleasure. And when you have that like ticking clock, it's kind of hard to be fully in that moment because you're just thinking what you have to do. And I think with my style of writing, I don't ever know what the story is going to be until I'm probably 85% done. And then I'm going back and I'm like, okay, I need this and that, and things are going all over the place. But it's kind of like, I say, it's like walking through the woods with like a blindfold on, and then suddenly you start to see like light coming, but you have to go like feeling your way through the darkness for a very long time. And then you see everything all at once. You know what I mean? But it's a complete darkness, so it's very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Writing Grace and the Fever was like a very, I was in the zone the whole time, which like I've written other books and it's not normally how it happens.
Awesome.
It was wild. I'd written my first book, I'd sold it, I'd started writing a second book, I'd written about three quarters of it, and I took off my blindfold and was like, oh no, this is not a book, this is like really bad. and people have read it who are not me since then, and they're like, yeah, it's bad. Like, I'm not crazy. Anyway, so I was really flipped out and convinced I was never gonna write anything again and whatever, and like Grace, I'd been sort of toying around with an idea about a boy band book. But I literally was in the shower one day and like the beginning of it came to me and I was like, oh, I know this whole book. I know exactly how this goes. And writing it was like the most fun thing I've ever done in my whole life. I wrote it, I had a day job at the time. So I would write from 8 to 10 in the morning. That was like the time that I had. And I would just like thousands of words and like, it was so fun. I love talking about it. Cause I'm like, oh my God, that was like fun. Writing a book was fun. Let's do that again.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
I'm jealous of myself then because I'm like, oh, like that, it's not going to happen again. And my third book was a slog, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I love writing first date scenes. Of course, writing rom-coms. I love first dates, first kisses. Anything that has to do with like a party or people getting dressed up, I love writing that too.
Yeah.
Sure. This is like a one sentence. I forgot about this. I had a makeover scene in the book, and I was like, is this going to be a princess story or not? Like, and how do I like, you know, sort of signal this? And I was like, what's the opposite of a makeover scene? It's getting your period. And yes. Not in a public way, like not, you know, but just where you're like, oh, like I'm PMSing, like that's why I want to kill everyone. And putting that in the book, that was the most fun.
So real.
Yeah, that should be normalized and be in every book. But anyway, I think we've now come to the point where we should get some questions from the audience because you've been sitting so patiently and I'm just going to shut up. Yes. Movie versus book is the question for those in the back.
That's like a very nuanced question. It's different than the usual way of framing it because it is very different. I think that it's been really exciting and when I visited set, it was incredible to see all these people like running around and like all the equipment and stuff and thinking it's all from a world that I created. However, it's not going to be exactly the same as the books. And I think the fans are really going to love it. I think, but it's just understanding that an adaptation is someone else's vision of what you've done. So it's not like going to be an exact replica. And I always say to people, like, I mean, I've seen parts of it, and I think it's really wonderful. But I also think that the movie that you have in your head is always going to be the one that you love the most. And that's what reading is you picture things a certain way. I'm really excited about it. I hope you guys love it.
Yeah. Have you had fans writing fan fiction about your work?
Not yet. And if anyone wants to, like, Oh, no, that's not true. I lied. A friend of mine wrote me fan fiction for my book, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life.
That's so cute. I love that. I had someone who actually not just wrote fan fiction, but then illustrated her fan fiction and then sent me the whole thing as a book, which was, she didn't send it to me. She came to an event that I was at, and then she gave it to me, which was amazing. I also get, I get a lot more drawings and stuff like that than actually written, so I count that as fan fiction. Yeah, why not?
I feel pretty lucky that people have done fan fiction of All American Boys to have, which is a book I wrote with a friend, that they continued the story because the story ends in a cliffhanger. It's amazing. What an experience.
Cool. Okay, so yes, right there in the, yeah.
I mean, I love triangles.
Sorry,
some people hate them. Love them.
What was the
love triangles, or some like other
versus any other?
Obstacle.
Yeah, love triangles versus any other. Thanks.
I love them.
I'm working on a book right now that has a love triangle in it, which I've never written before, It's hard. It's not my natural. Like, it's not where I go. I go to the other kinds of obstacles. But it's interesting, and it's especially because it does get done in YA a lot. It's really interesting to try and be like, okay, like, what can I bring to this? Like, what have I got?
To me, the reason I love it so much is, like, there's a sort of, like, agony involved with, like, wanting two things, and you cannot have them both.
Yeah.
And that is what, like, that place of tension and, like, discomfort.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Twilight fangirl, and so as soon as like I landed a book deal, I was like, I'm gonna do a love triangle. And literally the first thing that someone on my publishing team told me was, do not do a love triangle. And so I guess because they were hard to do well, and people kind of got fatigued after Twilight. I don't know. That's what I was told.
So real, yeah. Though. Yeah, you had your hand up. Yeah.
I made a conscious decision to All the Boys because I had the idea about a girl with the love letters, and I thought, to me, you know, I had written another series, The Summer I Turned Pretty, the main character was not Asian American, and I thought, like, this is an idea I had probably around the same time, but I really was hoping that my fans from that series would be open to reading something with a character that was not like them necessarily. And I thought this idea had enough like kind of effervescence to it that people would want to come to it. And you know, there's always risk involved in that. This was like, I guess now it's been 4 years, but you know, I think the risk for me was thinking like, I don't want this thing to be a bomb, and then people are gonna look at it and be like, oh, well, her last thing was a New York Times bestseller, but this thing, here's why it probably wasn't, because there's an Asian girl in the front and maybe people don't want that. And it becomes a sort of like self-fulfilling prophecy with it. You know what I mean? But to me, it was more important to go for that and give what I thought was like one of my best ideas and put an Asian American girl in that starring role just because I thought it had legs and it could do something. So I think that to me has been a gratifying part of it, because you know, it ended up doing really well and people loved it. And when I get emails from readers, they always say, you know, Lara Jean is me. And it's not that everybody is Asian American who says that. It's like, you know, to be able to, I think with the way that the cover is, I said to my publisher, I was like, it has to be photographic, and it has to be, you know, like, I really want to see her on that cover. And that was my whole goal, was that a girl could walk into the bookstore and see someone who looked like her on the shelf, you know? And so, but then it's been made me so happy though that other people who aren't necessarily that can still see her humanity and like respond to her character.
I know, that's the same thing that I was gonna say, is like, it's amazing to see, you know, an Asian girl or a brown girl on the cover. And then I still get so many readers who are like STEM people. You know, there's a lady recently who worked as a software engineer, and she bought a whole stack for all the women at her work who are not all Indian, and she was just like, you know, we see ourselves in this book. And so I think representation of like all kinds is so important. Yeah.
It's also a message for all the white folks out there. We should be buying books that are by people of color, and we should be buying and reading all kinds of those books in our classrooms. I want to get started. Are there a lot up front? Are there any more in the back? Yeah, 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 in the way in the back there. Yep.
I'm just going to have Brendan repeat your question because I have hearing loss. I couldn't hear that.
So I'm going to do my best because your question is really in-depth, so forgive me for butchering it. But in somewhat of a nutshell, you're asking Sandhya to talk a bit about what it's like to make, I think in the final part of your question, you're talking about make familiar that which may seem unfamiliar to so many other Americans in some regard through object and, through object and cultural familiarity and whatnot.
Oh, okay. So how do I make things that might not be familiar for people who aren't, you know, into Indian culture or don't know anything about it, basically, is what I'm getting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think, like, a huge part of it is, one is context clues. So, like, I try not to introduce, like, a bunch of new stuff that people are just like, what? What is happening? I have no idea. So I try to do a lot of context clues. But also, I think, like, we're in this kind of new era where Indian culture is becoming kind of trendy. So I was actually surprised that I didn't have to explain a lot of things. Like, pretty much everybody knew what an arranged marriage was. And, you know, like, the Hindi words that are in there, I had, through context or somebody else in the scene would explain what that person had said in Hindi. The things that I was a little worried about were, like, the parents and how, you know, they're really interested in keeping Dimple very feminine, and that was something I was worried that people would say the parents were cruel or mean, where it was more a cultural thing. So I did my best to show that everything came from love and that people, if Dimple's mom and she had, you know, arguments, that I was able to explore both sides in the scene so that people weren't like, this mom is abusive, you know, which I think was my main concern was the parents.
Yeah. One over there.
Is there, oh, yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
She's right in my eye line.
Go ahead. That was brilliant. And I'm going to unfortunately reduce it to how do you see the various aspects and elements of yourself dispersed among the various characters in your book? But your question was way better.
I mean, certainly, like, there are autobiographical elements in common with Grace. It's actually really interesting to me. I feel like people, you know, read my books and they imagine that I see myself in the female protagonists. And both my books so far, I'm like, no, that's, you know, there's similarities, obviously. But in the case of Grace and the Fever, actually the character I related most to, and I feel like this sounds sort of self-aggrandizing to say, but is Jess, is, like, you know, the guy who's sort of the leader of the band. But it's a lot about Jess also figuring out, he really believes that, like, Fever Dream is on his shoulders, and if he takes a break or if he, you know, disappoints someone, like, he has ruined it for these boys and everyone who's on their team. And I wrote it in a moment when I was under really a lot of pressure and dealing with a pretty bad depressive episode, you know, which I deal with occasionally. And writing that book, in a lot of ways, was like sort of a love letter to that part of myself, a way of saying, like, you know, sometimes you got to put it down. You can't make yourself this responsible for anything. It's not helping you, and it's not helping anyone else. So yeah, Jess Holloway, and to be like to relate to the character who's like the love interest in your story is a really interesting like thing to do to your brain. But it is. It's like, because all I was writing about was Grace being in love with him, and I was like, oh, this, like, person is lovable. I guess maybe, like, I'm, like, a little lovable, too.
Yes. Good.
And I think there's definitely parts of me in all the three song sisters. I won't say which ones, but there's probably the most annoying parts of me are in each girl.
Oh, yeah. Same for me. I, you know, same thing with my parents and my family was, they were like, feminism, why would you want to be a feminist, you know, and like they were like, oh, don't do that. And so that went into the book, and then they also didn't want me to be a writer, and that also went into the book in the form of Rishi, you know, wanting to be a comic book artist.
So this is the last question, and then we're gonna wrap it up. Yes, right there in the, yeah. Nice work. That's awesome. Share contacts. All right, I tell you what. If you come to the signing line, I'll be standing beside them. I will answer your question about how to become an editor if you come over to the table, because it's a long answer and we don't have time for it now, but I will totally do that for you. Jenny Han, Sandhya Menon, and Zan Romanoff, thank them all. This was great.
This conversation was from 2017's Portland Book Festival, presented by Bank of America. The 2018 lineup has just been announced, and the festival will take place on November 10th in downtown Portland. For more information about the author lineup, schedule, and tickets, visit literary-arts.org. This has been Literary Arts, the Archive Project. It's a retrospective of some of the most engaging talks from the world's best writers for more than 30 years of literary arts in Portland. Join us next time for the Archive Project, a literary arts production in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. To hear more from the Archive Project, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Support for the Archive Project comes from Cole Haan, the fashion brand that's acknowledging extraordinary people who write, read, and shape the world through their extraordinary stories. Find these and more at colehaan.com. Our show is produced by Crystal Liguori for radio and podcast. Special thanks to the Literary Arts staff, board, and community. The show would not be possible without them. Thanks also to the band Emancipator for our theme music, and thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Andrew Proctor, and this has been another edition of the Archive Project from Literary Arts. Join us next time and find your story here.